I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better.
Now, one thing we have an awful lot of in Australia is sunshine. Our NBN might suck, but our sunshine is definitely something to write home about. So when Neil Gibson from Phyllis Power decided that he was going to make Australia his new home, it seemed like the obvious choice. Gone were the manufacturing days, over being a salesman, solar was the way to go. Phyllis Power, Neil Gibson, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jackie.
Now, surely South Africa has an awful lot of sun too.
It does. It has a lot of sun. Solar's a big product there. I'd say Australia have probably done more than any other country in the world.
Big wide open spaces,
yeah,
lots of sunshine.
Yeah. To really encourage it.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a government point of view, not many countries in the world that offer the incentives that they do in Australia, as well as, like you said, plenty of roofs and plenty of sunshine.
Okay. So if you weren't playing with solar in South Africa, what were you doing?
So I started out as a toolmaker, which most people think that's making screwdrivers and hammers.
They're making tools. Yeah, funny that.
Yeah, it isn't quite that. It's manufacturing. So anything that's either plastic or steel needs a mold to manufacture it on a mass manufacture. So that's what I was trained to do, mainly in the plastics industry. Age of 20, I qualified, pretty much started working for myself straight away.
So how do you get into tool making?
Yeah, I guess funny story. My dad was an electrician and my grandfather's an electrician. And I just happened to be dating a girl towards the end of my high school days whose father was a toolmaker. And he came home one day, we were sitting around and said, hey, there's an apprenticeship going. You should maybe have a look at it. And so that was the end of that. And I ended up becoming a toolmaker.
Okay, cool. So there was an apprenticeship opportunity you could walk into.
Pretty much.
Is that a difficult thing to land in South Africa?
At the time, not really. During my intake, there were 3,000 toolmakers that started.
Wow.
And then when I actually qualified 4 years later, there were only three. And that was largely due to everything just going to China.
Okay. So you start with, was it 4,000 toolmakers?
Yeah, yeah. Every year, the intake was between 3,000 and 4,000.
How on earth have you got an industry that needs that many toolmakers?
Well, Durban had a massive manufacturing hub, so there were three car makers there and a lot of white goods and all the other stuff that was getting made there. South Africa's fairly remote, mm-hmm. kind of like Perth, so to get anything across the ocean is quite expensive. So everything was made in-house, and I guess coming out of obscurity when all the sanctions were on, South Africa was making everything itself. Nobody wanted to trade with us, so they had all the sanctions there. People just did it all in-house, really.
Okay, well, I guess needs must. If you need something or other, you can't get it from somewhere, you've got to build it yourself. There'd be many farmers in Australia who could relate to that. In the middle of the desert, then all of a sudden they needed a widget and there's no widget shop. Got it. Okay. So it's a lot of time in South Africa working in this tool making, and I guess that's in an industry that Australia needs desperately, because we don't have a lot of that. We have went to the stage where we had this skills shortage. Was that what sort of kind of prompted you to move to this beautiful country?
It did. My father had always encouraged me to look at Australia as an option to immigrate, because there was obviously South Africa's had a lot of political problems for a long time, and it was his belief that opportunities were just going to dry up and that sort of things were changing. So he said if you wanted a lifestyle like you were used to when you were growing up, Australia would be a good option to look at. And so I always had that in the back of my mind. And it sort of got to, at the age of 30, I was looking around and I saw opportunities were starting to dry up, and I made the jump across the pond. I was thinking of Brisbane initially, but they weren't offering any sort of easy entry. But WA had a really good offer where they'd fast track your application if you're on that skill shortage list. So I came in as a permanent resident if I agreed to stay in WA for 2 years, which was easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Great beaches here.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you come across straight from South Africa to here, running your own business in South Africa.
Yes.
Continue to run your own business here?
Yes. So, wound my business up there, was working for a couple of companies in the first 3 years I was here. In the engineering fields at the tail end of the boom, so there's a lot of layoffs. And so it's pretty much the thing, last and first out. So, and I was doing sales, so it's very much people can measure your performance when you're in sales. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, this is a perfect segue. I had been very interested in South Africa in solar, but for obvious reasons took a look around and thought this is a great segue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to jump in kind of did a sole trader thing for a little bit. We'll work for a company probably for about a year.
Work out how the lie of the land goes, yeah, who the connections are, who the people need to schmooze.
Absolutely. And I've made a lot of friends in the engineering in that first network that I created. Work for somebody else did really well in sales. But the company itself was struggling for a number of reasons, not because they weren't getting the sales, I just don't think their systems and processes were set up correctly. Mm-hmm. Husband and wife business, very successful, but they were going through a breakup and it was affecting things.
Yes.
So did a bit of a sole trader and then realized, look, if I'm going to do this properly and service my clients correctly, I need to set up a good business, good processes, good procedures, and do it myself. And that's where we're at. Then Phyllis was born.
Well, there you go. And so what's Phyllis's main focus?
Main focus is commercial solar. Mm-hmm. So small commercial and residential. When you know how to do commercial, residential is quite an easy project to do, but it's very competitive. And so when I first got into it in Perth, you had your bigger incumbents really spending a lot of, and as they still are, spending a lot of money on marketing. And I just felt that when I'm just starting out, I didn't have the infrastructure or the financial muscle to take those kind of guys on. So I just went with where my strengths lie. I had a lot of good relationships in Perth, knocked on those doors, and you know, we were very successful.
Well, that's what it is. There's two ways of doing things. You can either spend billions of marketing dollar on, you know, the TV ads, all that sort of kind of stuff, which is such an ineffective media in all reality. It's that big scattergun approach. Yeah. Or you can just go and ask the right people the right questions.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I think it works. I mean, obviously, these big companies are successful, but you have to have everything in place. You've got to have good marketing, then good appointment setters and good sales, good backup and support service. And those are big and bulky infrastructure, a lot of money required to set that up. Yeah.
Whereas if you're bootstrapping a solar panel, I mean, you don't really want to tuck one under your arm and sort of knock on door to door and go, hi, do you want one of these? I mean, just a little bit more involved than that.
Yeah. So in previous business experience, I started out at 20 with my little toolmaking shop, and that grew and grew and grew over 12 years from just me with one machine to me with three factories and 25 employees.
So you know how to scale.
But at the end of it, I was a bit disillusioned with, because what I really enjoyed was making things and delivering a great product. And in the end, what it was just managing people. Mm-hmm. So it had changed, and I was young and enthusiastic and didn't quite know all the lessons. And so I was learning, and I made all the classical errors. I grew on credit. I just shoved all the money back into the company. And it was a big learning curve for me. So
so you're still riding your bicycle to work. You don't have a car yet because you don't have any money.
I'd like to think I've learned a lot of the lessons of what to do and what not to do to a point.
I can't see a grey hair on your head. So it's not like you're ready to retire yet. There's life yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no retirement for me. I can't see myself ever retiring.
Well, retiring is just being able to get up in the morning and do exactly what you want.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, sitting there and having to play bowls, drink sherry and work out what to have for dinner.
Yeah. No, well, I've always been pretty active, and that's never really been a goal for me. I think being successful for me means a lot of things. I guess financial success is extremely important. I mean, you can't do anything without money. So when people say they don't really care about money or don't think money's important, I think they're a little bit misguided in that thinking. It's hugely important. But
because it buys opportunity.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that I've got to have a new car or I've got to have kids in private school or whatever, but what it does do is create opportunity.
Absolutely. It creates opportunity. But along with that, obviously come the obvious things is you have to be successful. You've got to have integrity. You've got to be looked at amongst your peers and in your community as somebody who's reliable, that you will refer to, that, you know, you're front of mind when people think, oh, you know, who does solar? Neil must just jump to their mind. So success means a lot of things. I guess your health as well. There's a number of things, your family relationships. So you've got to keep abreast of it. It's very easy to become, you know, narcissistic or become a sociopath where you're just money, 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 doing the next deal and just ripping people off. So you have to keep it balanced. But obviously, yeah, the money side of it is extremely important.
Right. I must admit, it's been a long time since I've heard someone associate with money with being a sociopath, but okay, maybe usually that's a murdering sort of kind of, but okay.
Well, I guess I'm just talking about the traits of just where they just don't care about anybody else, and it's just singular focus, driven by, you know, one thing alone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And just don't care about the people around them.
That's quite reasonable. And I mean, the thing is, solar in Australia is, it's been around for a while, but it really is an emerging industry. We had an interesting situation in Kununurra, where I used to live a number of years ago, where solar, of course, became very big very quickly. The problem was, of course, they were still running diesel generators at the time, and the solar loading in town got so high that the diesel generators couldn't keep their base load. Yeah. So one of the, only in Australia would you say, you've got all this sunshine, but no, you can't put it in solar. Yeah. And we've had a similar situation a while back, I think it's changed now, but with various places in suburbs in Perth where they've effectively maxed out their solar. They can't keep their backup power in place without, because of the loading there. Are you finding that within Perth, that some of the challenges, or has that resolved itself?
Look, it's a huge problem for the whole of Australia, because you've got that incumbent infrastructure there, the network that's supported by coal and gas, and then the off-grid is more diesel. We're fairly unique. The whole of the eastern seaboard is interconnected with one big network, and they've got far more solar over there than what we do here. So there's certain parts of Australia where there are problems.
Like, is that because, like in the eastern states, where everybody's connected together, though you might not need a whole bunch of power in one particular suburb, the suburb three over, which is on the same grid effectively, takes up that base loading? Is that what I'm understanding?
Exactly right. So what happens is if you get a saturation in one part of your network, let's say it's in the southern suburbs of Perth, and let's say 50% of the homes have got it, but up north, maybe only 5% of the homes have got it, it's what it can start to cause is voltage increases in one area and voltage drops in the other. And that is very bad for appliances. Anything running in your home, your TVs and your ovens, or maybe not your oven, but your electrical equipment and all that, doesn't like that. So the network is really, the network operators, which is Western Power here, are trying to keep that balanced all the time. So we're starting to reach a point, and they've started writing articles this year around mid-year, warning the public, look, the day is coming where there will be no more grid-connected power on offer. Mm-hmm. So grid-connected solar on offer. So I don't think they can stop it, and I believe we will innovate out of it. But just the way we see it going in, where you'll just get solar panels installed on your roof, and if you don't consume all of the power you're generating, it feeds back into the network indiscriminately, that may start to change.
So that's what's starting to cause these imbalances. It's not so much that my house runs on solar panels, it's that I'm then feeding back into the network, which is causing this unpredictable almost fluctuation.
And so you can imagine, if you've got a massive suburb, let's say there's 10,000 homes, and there's a bit of cloud cover comes over, and all of that production goes down, the solar goes down, and then all of a sudden the cloud disappears. So you've got, when the clouds come over, then the network will feed that, so all that power will start to rush in. Then the cloud disappears, so then your solar ramps up again, then the solar's feeding back against that. It creates issues. South Australia, the main reason why South Australia went for that big battery, the Tesla battery, which got a lot of publicity, was for network stabilization.
Right.
So it's not really, a lot of people think, oh, well, even though it's such a big battery, it could never run South Australia, couldn't run South Australia for more than a minute. But it's not really that for that. It's there just to provide stability.
So you can feed in and feed out without those big spikes.
Yeah, they're using it to regulate things. Yeah.
Okay. So is there sort of target suburbs which are better for some of these options, say to put, when you've got that light commercial and you've got this nice big roof space, and you might want to offset some of that? We're not at the point now, though, are we, where we are going to be disconnected? I mean, can you always put solar on a place but not connect it to the grid?
You can.
With your own, because we used to run on that, with giant batteries, effectively, you become your own little solar station?
You can.
Or your own power station?
You can. There are systems starting to come on the market which are going more and more off-grid. So I think if you live in the Perth Metro, you're always going to have a grid connection. Once we reach that point, and I think Western Power's number is 30%. Mm-hmm. So any one street circuit can't have more than 30% of solar. I think once we got over that, you see what the Horizon network's got. I think Horizon is anything north of Geraldton. Theirs was 10%. So already, they've already maxed that out. So if you want solar there, you've got to have a big battery, what they call a smoother. And so you basically keep, you're almost off-grid all the time. So that will just come into it.
Right. So there is options there if people are going, well, hang on a minute, I now live in Butler, and of course every house has got solar on it, so this isn't an option for me. There are options out there. It's just a case of talking to you about ways of making this.
Yeah. Fairly inexpensive bits of equipment that won't let it export. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And batteries have now become a thing. Before people were talking about it was always very expensive. Mm. But we've seen now South Australia, 1st of November, that's kicked off in a big way. Their local government's offering 40,000 batteries and $6,000 per battery. So that's over a 50% discount for those batteries. So once we see the scale up, the costs will come down and people will start to get into the market.
I guess it's like anything, isn't it? Once you get to a point where they're no longer a difficult thing to manufacture because the facilities which manufacture them have scaled to a point where they've got economics and scales That's of economy, it. Then yeah. as a consumer, that price is then passed on.
You look at solar for 10 years ago, a 1.5 kilowatt system was in the region of, $6,000 to $8,000. A 6 kilowatt system, which is our average now on a residential, was $20,000 to $25,000. We can do a really good system that's far better than the technology from 10 years ago, starting around the $3,000 mark.
Wow, that's a really achievable price point for a lot of people.
Very achievable, yeah. So the average family now have never been able to. It's the point of entry is lower than it's ever been, and the returns are just phenomenal.
And how does that flood into a business market? Is it still something which is available from a commercial point of view? If I own, say, my own commercial building, is that an option for me too? Or are these things really only a residential focus?
Very much so. I would say commercial is more beneficial to solar. The reason being that when the light hits the solar panels, it's generating power in that instant. And if you don't consume that power as you're making it, it'll just feed back into the network or into the grid. So businesses, the nature of business is to be open from, say, 7 a.m. in the morning to 5 p.m. when the sun's up. Mm-hmm. So you consume it as you're making it. So your payback is far better.
Of course, and the good portion of people aren't home during that time.
Correct.
They're at the business.
Correct, yeah. And so that's, the ideal customer for us in a residential setting would be people who do consume power during the day. Mm-hmm. So the average home, if it can consume 50% of its total of its daily consumption during the daylight hours, they're achieving around about an 18-month payback on their home solar.
Jeez, that's a very short ROI.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. And commercially, what would you be looking at? Or that would depend on how large a business it is.
Yeah, well, the paybacks are very much the same. So I would say on a five-day-a-week business, you're looking at 2.5 to 3 years max. If it's a seven-day-a-week business, 18 months.
18 months, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the price point on the panels and the inverters just keep coming down and down, and the warranties and the quality just keeps going up. So, it is an exciting business. And a lot of people sort of got in the beginning with the big government rebates. Yeah. They ran their business for 2 or 3 years, and when they saw the industry's change, thought, oh, this is the end. They cashed out and got out. But
that's a shame.
Yeah, I just see it. It's just getting better and better and better. And there's still such a little saturation. I think Perth's not even at 20%.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So if people are thinking this is a great idea, obviously they need to be talking to their accountant about how these things go. Is this considered something which could fit under that $20,000 capital investment thing?
Absolutely.
So yeah. It is completely effectively tax write-offable, for want of a better word, within that government incentive from a $20,000 mark?
On the commercial, it's harder for businesses to, if you're spending, I'll just throw some numbers out to you. If you're spending anything, say, from $1,000 to $2,000 a month on power, ideal system size would be a 30 to 40 kilowatt. Average price on that's anything from, say, $29,000 to $40,000. Wow. So that's a fairly large expense for a business that's just looking to save $1,000 a month on power. They would much rather, say, put on another salesperson or another machine. That's the way businesses think. So the finance side of it is a very important component of the business. So we do payment plans. We can either do a chattel mortgage or a payment plan like a rental. Mm-hmm. And so if we did that same scenario, $2,000 a month, seven-day-a-week business, we put a 40-kilowatt system on, we can do it for around about $450 a month as a rental, and they'd save $18,000 to $20,000 a year. So that would just about completely eliminate that $2,000. So, the returns are, it is a no-brainer.
Instantaneous,
really.
Absolutely. Yeah. So if people need to have this conversation with you because they're all fired up going, hang on a minute, I can save money by talking with Neil. Yeah. How does he do that?
Well, I guess the easiest way is, you can just jump on Villis Power Solutions.
So, you better spell it.
Yeah, so it's Villis Power. So VILIS power.com.au. Mm-hmm. That's the website. Or you can just go to sales@villispower.com.au.
And that'll find you directly?
First, find me directly, yep.
Brilliant. Okay, well, that sounds like a very sensible solution for a lot of our businesses, either working from home or certainly people as they're beginning to buy these commercial properties from a long-term investment point of view, because it has such a positive impact on their cash flow right from day one.
Yeah. A lot of people have talked to me about batteries. Batteries seems to be where the magic is because people want to get off grid. They just want to Yeah, a lot of people say to me they just want to give the middle finger to the man and, you know, not have to worry, not have to be dependent. But the solar's really where the big savings are. The battery's a luxury. I would say if you are considering batteries, do the solar now. Get the payback while the feed-in tariffs are still there, while the STC rebate, federal rebate is still there. Because it's over 50% of a residential system is still subsidized by the federal government. So on a 6-kilowatt system, you're looking at around about a $4,000 rebate. And if you go for an entry-level system around the $3,000 mark, you know, it's a big savings.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. I can see people's fingers on the dialing button right there.
Thanks, Jackie. Really appreciate that.
Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.